Who doesn't love a good stick figure drawing? But they don't exactly shout, "I'm a professional therapist," do they? See what professional exercise prescription software looks like with a 3-month free trial on us. Discover how easy it is to fully customize patients' rehabilitation plans whilst choosing from hundreds of exercise pictures and videos, each with modifiable descriptions. You can even send them out by email or WhatsApp. Plus, you get inbuilt virtual consultation software as standard. Claim your free trial now at rehabmypatient.com/physiomatters.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you're good. I'm Jack Chew. This is Chewing It Over. Mondays and Thursdays, we discuss all things MSK practice and where it might intersect with culture, especially our little window of culture where people chat about these things, social commentary in this world of ours. And we do so, as I said, Mondays and Thursdays. And I just keep forgetting to update this little frame that says Mondays and Fridays and keep getting grief from Jim for failing to do so. And so I feel like I'm kind of, whether consciously or subconsciously, playing chicken with him now. I'm quite enjoying getting told off on a daily basis for having not updated the frame. And so I feel like a Tim Pot radical for keeping it wrong. So I'm now unsure. Now, I don't like to indulge clickbait much, but I couldn't help myself today. So I've called the show this, which is pretty inaccurate, as we'll come to discuss. But it says on there, Greg Lehman defends therapeutic ultrasound, which you'll see in a minute isn't strictly true. But Greg's going to join me, and we're going to talk a little bit about a disagreement that we had on Twitter a few weeks ago, in which, as ever, it's better to discuss in person. He couldn't be here, we couldn't fly him in, but he is in Europe, which is good. So he's teaching in Norway tomorrow, and so we were on better time zones and we could do this today. So I'm going to bring Greg in a second. Last chance on Therapy Live tickets. Let me use this little cool ticker thing. So please do visit the website and get those snapped up. I think they will close early next week on projections for tickets, and that'll shut that off so that we can lock it all in and make sure the tech is working smoothly. So please do get those. The 25th is when the show is, and so yeah, it's imminent. We have had a couple of bits of problems with the tech. If you are watching live, please do send us a comment and make sure you let me know if you can hear me okay. When I bring Greg in, it might freeze for me. And I might have to refresh it, which is what happened with Roger and John in recent shows. And so sorry about that. That's a bit of a tech issue I'm trying to work out. But hopefully, if I click this button, Greg, can you hear me?
I can.
Right. This is where I've been told he can hear me, you can hear both of us, and I can't hear him. So sorry if I'm talking over Greg. I will be back in 2 seconds. Now, hopefully that's working now. Hello? He's nodding.
I'm here.
Yes, we're good. Right. Sorry about that, mate. Right. We're on. We're on. It's all smooth until that. It's doing it every time. So, yeah. I mean, I don't need technology to make me look a fool, but it's not helping. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm messed up because there's no darkness here in Norway. It's in the Arctic, right? So it's almost the longest day of the year.
So you're far enough north to not,
yeah,
not have even a night time, right?
Uh-huh.
Tell everyone about your mistake with the skate park, because it's funny.
It's funny at my expense. So I was in Rome teaching, and then I'm teaching tomorrow, Friday, in Norway. And I didn't go home. I'd often go back to Toronto. I'm like, that's profligate. I can't do that. So I just had to stay in Europe somewhere, and I wanted a skateboard. So I knew there's a skate park here in Trondheim, and I got a cheap Airbnb right across from it. I can see it. It's this beautiful old building, has a beautiful skate park. I go and I buy a board on Monday night. I went for a jog.
No way.
Oh yeah. So I bring my wheels.
You travel with your board.
No. No, I bring my wheels, like my trucks and my helmet and all my gear, because I pad up, and I like to buy a deck at the like the local skate shop, and I run 6K there and back, and I'm carrying the board. And then I pop my head in because it should be open and all the doors are locked. And I look in the window and the whole thing is under renovation. So I came here just for this skate park. And it's fucking
I feel so bad.
And I could have gone anywhere. I could have went to Copenhagen and Malmö, Sweden and all these beautiful places for, you know, less money.
I feel sick for you. It's not quite the same, but you were in Manchester and stayed really close to a decent park that we have here. But just the timing of it meant that I could only sort of see you very briefly, and we nearly missed each other, even though you were on my doorstep. So it's not quite the same, but you at least got some runs in when you were here. But I do like your sort of skate park tour of the world thing. That's pretty fun. I like that.
You probably
need to either travel with or find rentals for like some longboarding or something else that you can like fall back on or something that's not going to be as park specific. Like we need to refine your choices.
Nah, I'm pretty. I only kind of do the same thing over and over.
Talking of which, let's talk about one of your fun hobbies, which is obviously a shared interest. Now, just want to give you all some context here. Also, just to reference, Martin Christensen said that Trondheim is way south. I mean, he is right up there. Like he's on, you know, and it's one of the only reasons that, you know, Martin lives, I imagine, on I have in mind that Martin lives on a commune of like 20 people max, most of which he's related to. On an island or something. So yeah, funny. So he's pretty far north and pretty isolated. But yeah, I south to no one but Martin. Just to give everyone a bit of context then, so I tweeted, it's a while ago, maybe a month or so, I think the date might be on this. I said, most days I'm exposed to signs of progress, but not today. Today I saw a clinic selling a therapeutic ultrasound machine because they only need 5 rather than 6 of them. They were inundated with interested buyers, right? So I am implying from that is a sign of regress rather than progress, to see that, especially with the volume of it and stuff. So Greg then said, do you have a lot of evidence that what you do outperforms ultrasound? And further on in that thread, I think we all hold our favorite treatments to a different standard than ones we don't like. You think ultrasound is rubbish. So I would assume there's a lot of research that had informed your opinion. We had a back and forth briefly, and this was my favorite. I used a penguin GIF that brought Greg to the debate. You know, we decided to have a chat on air because it was fun. So that's my favorite tweet of the lot. Now, just to clarify then, there are, you know, just so that we don't talk past each other, because I don't think there's need to. I think there's two issues here. One is, I feel a bit of a non sequitur between my tweet and yours, right? I don't think that necessarily my tweet baits that conversation as much as you maybe think it does, because the second part of it is where I agree with you more and always have done over intellectual consistency between modalities. Like do we sometimes treat some things with kid gloves and then go hard against things we don't favor? And that's where, you know, perhaps was coming across as if I disagreed with that premise. So I don't want to fail to talk about both those things, but I just want to invite you to say as to why you commented what you did on my tweet.
Sure. So like, I think it's really hard when you tell people not to do something, right? I think there has to be some evidence there. So I was curious, like, have you ever done ultrasound in the past? Were you taught to do it in school?
Yeah, I was taught to do it. I just wondered, and I'll pull the tweet back up. Where on that tweet did I tell someone not to do it?
So it sounds like you're saying if people do it, if they're interested in getting an ultrasound machine, then that means the profession is regressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can defend that, but that's not me saying don't do it.
Okay, but...
It's also mentioning the relevance of having 6 machines. That was just one too many. That's a primary modality in that clinic, clearly.
Well, unless they have 30 people there, but so that's only, you know, one machine per 5 people. What I'm curious about is, how do people say no to a modality or a thought process? That's what that is. It seems from your tweet that you're not supportive of ultrasound as an intervention.
Yeah.
Okay. We can agree on that.
Oh, why? Yeah. I don't want to for a second be a smart ass and say that I wasn't implying anything with the tweet. No, but yeah, it's that, generally speaking, I think it's absolutely the position I hold and defensible, but it's just, it doesn't need to be necessarily defended as narrowly with data as you're seeming to suggest, right? I'm a minimalist, right? I think we need to better justify any intervention we would have beyond the basic sort of reassurance over time frames of certain problems, right? So I'm sure. I'm someone that comes at things in such a way that then wants everything to be held to similar standards. However, I think that especially under the historic sort of rationale for therapeutic ultrasound, which is this notion of, say, pro-inflammatory or to accentuate remodeling of tissues, I think is regressive in two ways. One, in which it's implying that that is a primary reason for someone to seek out help from, say, any therapist in MSK game, because it is tissue-centric, for one. And the second thing is that I think there is an inefficiency to that administering of a treatment than you could do elsewhere. Now, that's the bit where we can have that debate as to, can I justify that second point? Can I justify that what it is I do is better than putting on therapeutic ultrasound? Now, that's something that narrowly with data, I think that's absolutely where I agree with you. I think that where I use the word evidence in its broadest form, I'd be happy to defend that with all sorts of different arguments and logic models.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You can argue it based on mechanisms, and you have an assumption there that you know how something works to decrease pain, you know. Yep. It always comes back to exercise, right? When you look at the mechanism, we don't know why exercise helps with pain. People say, oh, well, yep, exercise is going to make you stronger. Well, that's not always a mediating variable for recovery. Yep. Right? So again, like, if I, like, people will say, you're not saying this. People say, well, you know, ultrasound and all these passive interventions are harmful, right? They're not helpful. We shouldn't be doing them. And they'll give all these reasons that are mechanism based or something like that. And then I would say, okay, if those mechanisms are so important, you would think that ultrasound would have its ass handed to it in these comparative,
it would be destroyed.
Or if you're against manual therapy and you say, oh, manual therapy, if you just lie there, it's going to make you reliant on the therapist, and then it's passive. Again, you would think that an active exercise-based intervention would smash it out, and it doesn't, right? No. Or even the things that we really love, like I love the CFT approach. That's how I practice. That's what I teach. And then when you look at the research, it doesn't destroy the other things. Right. So it's this, like, what I'm really interested in here is how we decide as a profession to move on from an idea that was once supported. Like, ultrasound was once taught everywhere. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you want, and if you can go through the systematic reviews, you will see systematic reviews that support it for pain, for knee OA. They do exist. Plausibly, it makes no fucking sense to me. I have no idea. Like, that's why I never liked ultrasound, and I never really did it. I was cavitating bubbles. Like, I denigrated because of the mechanism. However, I then wonder, what if you're just this amazing person who loves your patients, who's empathetic, who listens and does all these things, right? Right? You can know how to communicate. You set goals, like, if active listening. And for some reason, you also are really good with the ultrasound machine. I don't know why. It's what you like to do. And people are getting better, right? Yeah. And that's the mechanism. So then, because people will say the same thing for exercise. They're like, oh, the exercise. We're not doing spine exercise to, like, you know, stabilize the muscle. But we're showing people that we care and that, you know, we're listening to them. And then we get them moving again. Well, it's almost the same thing to me, right? We don't know the mechanism of exercise. It's not what we've often taught people. Yeah. And so I just have trouble. I'm not saying denigrating ultrasound or any intervention now. I'm having way more difficulty doing that Because I don't think those are the things that are important for care.
And that it begs a few questions. We'll definitely come to the fact that then is that a fair comparison? I think that what's interesting and why this was useful to do is because I think people know, and we have a shared audience, and I've admittedly learned a lot of this from you and others in this space. So it's like I am definitely following on. But it's that argument you've just made is actually something that people have heard me make mainly as a parrot in your stuff. And that I think that is a fair point. But where I can hold that view as you do, but also feel that your decision to then think that this goes against it or can't be compatible with it perhaps is pedantic. Because I want to ask, do you think that in that instance, having observed what I observed, right? So I see that. And also I see that within a context of which I saw it, which you don't have there, but that is that people falling over themselves to have more ultrasound machines, I see as being a decent proxy. Nothing's perfect, but a decent proxy for if I had to decide, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't think that's a positive thing for the industry. And for various reasons, you're right. Not necessarily one that's like the first thing I would argue with was a set of robust data. But if I was to ask you the same thing, then you observe what I observed. Is that, if you had to, you make a decision, is that a good thing or a bad thing for the profession? Are you gonna?
No, I agree. I see your point there. I don't disagree. It's probably not a good thing, right?
Mm. And but why is it not a good thing? The question that I think is definitely would open things up is if you then said, why is it? So had you have asked them, why is that not a good thing for me to unpack an argument, right? Why is it? If I had to ask you that, why might it not be a good thing if you do think so?
So if I had to mansplain your argument to you.
You can fansplain it to me.
It would be the same fansplain. It would be the same thing as like you were doing a course on the FMS. And we say, hey guys, one person canceled, you know, who wants a spot? And 20 people sign up. 20 people want that spot, right? If there was like a huge demand for this, that would be the same. It would be the same idea. But like, that's not good either. That's like, you know, people thinking it's more of the philosophy behind it, that people think that they need to do these things to get people better. Right?
One of the things I'm interested in is, do you think that I needed this evidence of what I do outperforming ultrasound to say this? That's the bit that I'm interested in, because like, I like how you think, you know, I'm a fan, right? But then one of the things that I think you've started to do because you love, it's almost like this hobby horse relativism, saying careful what you wish for. We've not got that much of a strength of argument for the things we like, and we sometimes denigrate the things we don't. Because of that core point, which I support, you've started to see things in fun, snarky tweets, which you're a master of fun, snarky tweets, aren't you? So do I need that evidence in order to say that, in your opinion?
No, I also believe you can do whatever you want.
Sure. So should I have done that, I suppose, yeah? Do you think I should have done?
I don't know. Right? I do this to myself. Like, I try to, can I hold myself to a higher standard? Do the things that I support, like I write, like when I debate online, if you notice, I usually debate people who are similar to me. Mm. You know, Brad Neal and I, like we used to argue a lot. I would want to debate Brad and Christian Barton and that group because we're doing all the same thing. So my goal is to try to like improve my own skill set and understand my own knowledge. So I do try to be consistent and go after things. But so I know what you're saying, and I don't have a good answer, but I can only go, sorry, I just have to change. I have to change the question a bit. I would just say like, and I think you talked about this maybe with Roger Carey or maybe someone else, where if you're creating a curriculum, oh no, it was someone else. It was Chris Mayer or something like that. And it was the spine stability stuff, the motor control training. If you're creating, you know, the curriculum at a university, how do you make those decisions, right? How do we decide what gets in and what doesn't? And you have to do that relativism relativity questions. You like, because there'll be people there who'll be like, in the year 1999, they were doing lots of ultrasound. And then 25 years later, people are saying, And they could justify it then with some of the clinical research. Now they're saying, no, 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 we don't do ultrasound. And that person could say, well, why? And you would say, well, the profession's changed. And you say, well, what is it about
the profession? What changed it?
What's the research that made it? And I have to wonder, it's like spinal flexion. So people now are pretty comfortable saying, oh, you should be able to load your spine into flexion. It's getting to be an accepted view. And I'm like, if you know your history, it was actually an accepted view 30 years ago as well. Mm-hmm. Nothing really has changed in the research in that time. There's not really much that's a slam dunk either way. It's like the profession changed and not the research.
Well, that's why you're right on the fads and trends thing. Like any fair reading, I won't call it an objective reading, but, you know, Jesus.
I know, I don't,
I know, I biases, you know, but like, a fair read, a fair reading of the evidence, especially across history, and then correlating that against fads and trends and certain like market behaviors, like courses or purchasing of equipment or whatever, which we're talking about. I think that that's absolutely true. And also that any fair reading of that evidence would make you then agnostic as to whether or not to spare or load the spine. But I suppose it's then what I come to is that what is the default as it stands when the patient presents, right? What are their views and how is it behaving according to their symptoms? Do you have a justification for changing that, right? Are you going to leave that with someone? Are you going to change that? What is your rationale for doing so? Especially if it's otherwise, you can't make a case for that being a problem. And I think that's where it's interesting, isn't it? Is that the position in which the patient presents or the situation of which that either study or that logic model is then presenting, that category. I think that's where people do get carried away. They think that therefore we've got these studies or this argument that means that posture matters less than we once thought. Therefore, we should encourage people to suggest it never matters, or that then you hold yourself however which way you want, is not necessarily the point, especially if someone's having, oh, this is how I see it. It's like, well, no, you need to change that. Why? You know, that's where I think that absolutely is the case. I suppose the bit that I was loitering on earlier is just in case that, because I am interested in this, as to whether or not, because of the way that you've seen things and the frustrations you've had over inconsistency, has that made you away from humor that you have used previously? So there's a video that, you know, I love of you and Mimi, right? So an argument I could make where you're quite rightly like making a cartoonish impression of overly biomechanical logic, right? That was for me good satire, and it's like, why not make fun satire, right? But the point there is that if I was to comment on that, implying that, is that, you know, how do we, you know, do you have evidence for what you do better, Greg, to make fun of something like that? It feels like that's, again, pedantic, and that we sometimes then take the edge off something that I think you've brought to the profession, which is this sense of we can be playful with this stuff. And sometimes people can get carried away and they can't justify that behavior. So here's some satire, right? Is it that over the recent years between those times that you think actually that we should take that edge off and we shouldn't be lampooning stuff like that? And therefore, that's why you're coming to me saying, check yourself, Chew.
No, so maybe we have to decide what to lampoon. And maybe there's a criteria here. Because I actually think what I did with Mimi, I could justify a lot of that. Because a lot of that was making fun of things that people say where there's no research behind it. It wasn't really well supported. You know, like there's a right way to walk. It was the kinesiopathological model that I was making up. And that's something where I would say, like, no, you can't really say these things. And people do all the time. And researchers do. Like, I always see it. I say this all the time. But you'll see. Okay, now I'm going to pick on people. But here's an example. This actually kills multiple birds with one stone. There's a few papers on greater trochanteric pain syndrome now. One's Ganderton, the other one's maybe Cowan, Dr. Cowan, where they were amazing and they had a sham exercise group. I don't know if everyone knows these papers, but they had a sham exercise group.
I know the Cowan one, but yeah.
Yeah, the one I first mentioned there, now I've totally blanked on her name. She's a great researcher, but That was 2018. Ganderton, Charlotte Ganderton, Dr. Ganderton.
No, I don't know.
Oh, that's the first one. So no difference between groups. That's the thing. Exercise, when it was compared to a sham, there was no difference between groups. Now, no one's going to say, let's remove exercise from the curriculum, you know, something like that. If that came out with ultrasound, then I guarantee you'd have people saying, why are you doing ultrasound? It's not evidence-based. But this will change nothing about exercise. And then within those papers, even in the discussion, they say, well, every time we gave exercise, we gave advice to not go into hip adduction to create compression on the tendon. So now what ends up happening in our profession here is that advice, don't create compression on the tendon, ends up being evidence-based because it was thrown into and shoehorned into the abstract and then the discussion. And then somehow people think, oh, the advice to avoid compression is now supported by research, when it wasn't, because they didn't have a group that wasn't told that, right?
Yeah, okay. Or that,
so we do this all the time. And then suddenly it gets adopted. And then 5 years from now, people are going to be like, oh yeah, how dare you compress a tendon? How dare you stretch a tendon? And then 10 years from now, we're going to be treating tendon compression the way we treat spinal flexion. Whatever. Maybe.
Yeah, well, stretching tendons, compression over bony landmarks and isometrics are new age dogmas that run rampant through folkloric way in the same way that other things had with tendons before. And so, you know, I completely agree and do totally understand that. And I think that fads and trends thing, I used to do a workshop series called putting function over fashion. And the core argument that I had, and I used some contemporary examples there, was that, and this is why people's eyes water a little bit when they either come and shadow me or they hear about just how stripped back my practice is, because they're just like, the thing that they think is the special sauce is sometimes absent or is often absent from what they witness in my practice. And then it's quite rightly up to me to then say, well, but here's my outcomes. Unfortunately, not well blinded, because it's practice-based outcomes, but this, if we, and it's not just because it's just me here, but if we're getting these results and we're not doing that thing that you think is the special sauce, then that should beg the question as to what is it that is helping with these outcomes. And whilst, you know, it's something that I'm not pretending to be agnostic on what I think it is, you know, it's generally speaking, it is so minimal. It's a very minimalized strip back approach in such a way that then always begs the question over these mechanisms. And I think that's one of the things that I found interesting about why it was worth us just unpacking it a little bit more. Because it's not as if we needed to, kiss and make up on this. It was more that, like, where is that line between what is fair game for sort of, which I felt was totally justified in that example in terms of what that, for me, that market behavior that I observed implied. But then it did, you know, it was fair for you to beg that question. And the question, though, I want to just come to for the last few minutes is what you and Brad ended up having a fun back and forth on with me was, there is this argument that gets overused, which is that, yeah, but the secondary benefits of exercise relative to lying on a couch with ultrasound, that then people do a bit of an outcome switch, don't they? Which in research we wouldn't stand for, right? You'd spot that a mile off. But in practice-based rhetoric, we sometimes then, oh, yeah, well, there's this. And it's just like, well, no, make your point. But in my instance, I wasn't necessarily making that claim and trying not to. It's that, but there is this, there is something to that argument in that you know, it isn't the same in every which way, in that putting someone prone on a bed, an ultrasound in their back, compared to, which is why you and I practice a model that looks a lot like CFT, but generally speaking is a functional exposure type model that's laced with reassurance, is one of the reasons why we end up justifying it. Not the only reason, but it's kind of that you can make sense of that more active exposure approach than it is that a conversation and some cold gel on your back. So we end up splitting that way. Do you see where I'm going with that?
I do. And this is, I've been thinking about this for the past 6 months. Maybe one of the best treatments is the one that the therapist believes in. Right? Maybe. And we do this in the course.
Is that more convincing? Is that what you mean?
With exercise prescription. So for the knee, we know it doesn't matter what exercises you do. You got to do some exercise for the knee. It can be stretching, and you don't even have to do them, but sometimes they'll be helpful. So maybe the best exercise is the one that you like teaching the most. You know, if you're a kettlebell expert, everyone gets fucking kettlebells. You know, yeah. And that enthusiasm will come across and people will get better. Right? Yeah. If you're Pete O'Sullivan, you gotta have people flexing the spine. That's what he's good at teaching, relaxing.
Not holding their breath.
Yeah, if you're McGill or Aaron Horshed, you got to be stiffening the spine. That's what you're good at teaching. And why not? And that both of those approaches seem pretty different, but they're going to help a lot of people, right? And so I just think we're arguing sometimes about the wrong things. I don't know what the right things are, but I just like. So by all means, still make fun of things.
You don't need to worry about that.
I just wanted to take your tweet it another way and say, like, why do we know what we know and why do we hold opinions? And I'm like, I think it's less evidence based than we think. There's something else going on, you know, like the exercise for NeoWay. I have a whole website, OA Optimism. It's all about exercise. And when you look, like, Franson has a review. I think it's Dr. Franson. Anyways, I think she wrote, the average pain reduction is 12 points out of 100. That's what you get. Okay, like it's not a panacea.
You know, with that, let's just use that as a
3.5. Sorry, go ahead.
Right. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. We had a slight delay there. What I just want to use that as an example then. When someone presents with OA knee, let's just make someone then a sort of relatively recently postmenopausal woman that's become less active, has a couple of other recent comorbidities, presents with OA knee. And we're then looking at some rehabilitation for her using all sorts of resources, yours included, to help guide that process. When I'm thinking about my exercise selection, absolutely the literature for OA knee in terms of sort of pain, definitely I'm then not guided by that in terms of specificity. I then weigh up the patient's preferences and choices that would mean that then, you know, she bloody hates dancing, she's not going to a Zumba class, but if she adores it and would love to get back into that, then that might be something that I'd be considering. But what I was just going to mention is, as a secondary outcome, getting her to do, say, weight-bearing exercise because of her demographic profile and the fact that that would be good for her bone density, when actually I looked through her records and 5 years ago she had an osteopenic DEXA, right? That's the sort of thing where I would add that specificity for other reasons. And that they're hard to tease out in the research, but is that not expert clinical reasoning? And sometimes I wonder, like, are you saying that you currently are in a situation where you are more of a relativist than I'm describing myself there, and that I probably need to better justify those sorts of decisions?
No, I think that's great what you're doing. I have a slide of, like, if it doesn't matter what exercise you choose, what are the other potential reasons?
Right. Okay.
And
okay.
Patient preference? Secondary health benefits, you know, you're good at something, right? And
you prefer it. You're going to be, that's what you mean.
Yeah. That's it. So you can make that case. So someone like that, it sounds like you could say, there's lots of things that we can do to help with your pain. There's like a smorgasbord or a buffet. There's some things that you can do that might help with some of the other things that you've told me about, right? That would be the idea. And that's how you can sell bone density and sarcopenia minimization and all of that stuff. And then, you know, you might like the paper that just came out. I love minimum effective dose, and I just want to sell this paper. So I'm just going to tell everyone about it, even though you didn't really ask. It's the Husted paper. It's all that group, like Christian Thorberg and Banholm and Rathliff, all those great researchers.
It's the knee. I'll post the link if you can. Just give me something that'll help me on Google, like, and I'll find it.
It's osteoarthritis cartilage 2022. If you go on and just go to PubMed and put Rathliff M and then knee, it'll pop up. It's the QuadX1 trial, where they compared like 2 sessions a week, 4 sessions a week, or 6 sessions a week of 3 sets of 12. God forbid, 3 sets of 12 or 3 sets of 10. 3 sets of 12 of knee extensions with a band at home. That was it.
Oh my God, Michael Rathliff is absolutely prolific. He's probably published whilst we've been on air.
Yeah. So there you go. And that was helpful. Pretty standard pain loss, you know. Yeah. And so, like, there's no, you know, I've heard people say, oh, when you do the knee exercises, of course, alignment is alpha and omega. And you'll even see, that's the thing. You'll see that JP Canero has a fantastic, like I like it, a great article. No, it was something else. It was about like, there's recommendations for knee exercises and it's about getting, they'll say proper alignment or motor control stuff. And that's the stuff you can make fun of because that's bullshit. That's been well tested, that people keep saying it and keep promoting it. And you can't say that. That's been well tested. There's no proper alignment for the knee exercises. There's no motor control stuff. So I'm all for making fun of that when someone has tested it and disproven it.
But then you know that with that, part of the reason why you're seeing that as being qualifying well for IA is because of the implication of what that's suggesting, right? They are making claims of what that does. What you seem to maybe be giving a therapeutic ultrasound a bit of a pass for is that they're not, just because they're not implying the mechanism of effect for it. But that is always in play, right? It's like the people that are administering therapeutic ultrasound are not going, we haven't a clue, but it's just that, you know, really, there's some evidence for it. That's not the story, right? The story is the age-old dogma as to what the mechanism is that they're implying. So just because it's not been explicitly said on the advert selling said ultrasound machine doesn't mean that I can't then recognize that, unless proven otherwise, that's fundamentally the rationale for the administration of that. And therefore, much like with those movement control nonsense that you've just been describing, where they're making implications, that's one of the reasons is that that's why I think that there is a bit of an inconsistency sometimes with this, where you're allowing for it to be placed in its context on the motor control, but you're then, for the sake of argument to some degree, because, you know, fun contrarian, you're then sometimes then saying, well, it's just a machine. It's like, well, it's not. It comes with its baggage, and it's a reasonable thing to suggest that is what I'm critiquing.
Okay. I don't like the baggage either.
Yeah, less baggage. We're out of time, but anyway, always a pleasure. We've had a couple of comments which are, you know, in spirit of this discussion, are equally playful. Ash, for example, says, what happened to the old Greg? And he's put a teary-eyed emoji, so that tells me that he's joking. I hope he is. I'm now scared to tweet Greg because he said he debates with only those at his level. Are you becoming a scary, like, authority on things, Greg? You know that this is the people are worried.
No, I only like to have debates with people who I think are open to them and are similar to me. Both of us have to be engaged with, like, open to being, like, wrong.
Sure. You know,
I like the idea of a dialectic, not a debate.
No, I agree.
Like, people don't know. How could we do better?
It's a good example on this because I was definitely open to be wrong. I'm just fortunate in this case I wasn't. Ask Greg what he hates more, A-lock or people talking in absolutes. I don't really know what that means.
I did a debate on spinal flexion with Andrew Locke in Australia.
Oh, that's a person. I thought you'd had like a bad experience with a padlock or something, but yeah, I did see that. That's the guy. He did.
So that's a good example of like, that could have been really good. Like that could have been something where it's special, where people could see how people can disagree, you know, or at least acknowledge what we both don't know, how you deal with the murkiness of doubt there. Instead, it was weird.
Yeah, it was a bit odd, wasn't it? That, but I should have him on the show if I can brace myself and have the patience. I don't know what this means, Louise. Sorry, I don't know if the WAAC is either a typo or it's an acronym for something. But sorry about that. I don't know. Sorry, Louise. But if you're still listening, then please do comment again. But anyway, I doubt it's that, but fair play. My guess was cleaner than that. Right, thanks a lot, mate. I've taken you into overtime. Just, you know, keep being you. I'm happy for you to be pedantic on any more of my tweets. But in the meantime, tell people where you're teaching soon and where they can find out and go on your course.
Oh, jeeps. Well, tomorrow's Norway, and I don't teach till September. I don't know. It's on my website. I don't even think I'm in the UK at all. I got nothing planned.
Which is criminal. Now we've tried
to get to London.
It's ridiculous how many times we tried to get Greg to our place, and that's all your fault. Not you personally, Greg, by the way. I mean the audience's fault for not. So if you want to see Greg in the UK, then that's up to you to get bums on seats. And as we're climbing out of COVID and stuff, trying to see what normalization behaviors occur in the CPD game. But one thing I can say is, and I've said it publicly a number of times, is that it remains the best course that I've ever been on. It's significantly informed my practice. And I love it, especially for the bits in which me and Greg disagree. It matters not. You go to that course and it is a place in which you have true challenge. I've never really seen people get any better at getting true round table type discussions and truly hearing all voices and understanding the reasoning underneath them without sort of just caring about what answer we all come to, like what's underneath that. And that we need more of that in education. And I thank Greg for bringing that forward. It's now a number of years since I did it, and there's always room for update. And so I'm interested and hopeful that we can get together in person again soon, mate.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. I appreciate that.
No problem, mate. All right. All the best. All right. Well, I'll see you all on Monday, I think. I have no idea who's on the show, but it'll be proper good because, you know, that's what we do here. All right. Anyway, bye for now.